Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City and Weehawken, New Jersey, collectively. This is Working the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist. And also, I got to sneak this in here, folks, top 100 Latino for the third consecutive year via the Latino Spirit Online magazine, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the great Patrick Vincent Rivera. What's going on, PBR?
Nah, just kidding. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, brother. What's going on? Happy June to you.
Happy June to you. I sent a dozen rainbow flags to your house. Hope you enjoy them.
Enjoy.
Just really, really excited to be back here. I bravely fought COVID. I went over, and I didn't have to relinquish the title. Well, we'll talk more about stuff like that later on. Just enjoying this Saturday over here. Nice to be back live on the show again. Popped open a White Claw and vaping Peak Xenial right now. And I'm ready to talk all things world of wrestling / sports entertainment.
And a happy advanced Father's Day to everybody tuning in this week here on Blog Talk Radio, especially to you, Patrick, the great father that you are with your beautiful twins. So shout out to all the dads out there, again, as we approach Father's Day in just a couple of weeks. Pat, a lot to talk about in the world of professional wrestling, as you say, / sports entertainment. Great In Your House premium live event tonight on Peacock with the 57 ads, I'm sure, during the broadcast, as NXT will be in your house later on tonight. Great card here. Obviously, you know, not a very long event from what it seems like in terms of length, and I know for us wrestling fans, the length of pay-per-views / premium live events has been a point of contention, I think, for a lot of fans and marks alike in recent months. So I think this one should be kind of abbreviated tonight. But we're going to have a great six-man tag team match where apparently the losing team joins the winning faction. I think I've seen this somewhere before. The Legado del Fantasma will collide with Tony D'Angelo, the Don of NXT, Stax, not to be confused with my mayor and state senator, the great Brian Stack, and Two Dimes tonight. Interesting six-man tag here on In Your House.
Yeah, I think it's going to be probably an opener, something like that. So, I mean, it'll be probably full of high spots and stuff like that, and they'll get things going. You know, they usually deliver with their shows, especially their premium live events. You know, all the old takeovers, you know, the brand is really known for really putting on good shows. I know a lot of the marks now kind of turned on NXT, but I still think that they have a really great system down there. They have gimmicks, they have shticks, they have stables, they have factions, whatever you want to call them, that are working. It's stuff that's starting to get over. And, you know, before long, these people are going to be, you know, some of the mainstays on the main roster. So I always feel like the NXT shows are worth checking out. And, you know, we were discussing before we went on, you know, whether we should cover it or not. And, you know, I just want to say I lobbied for the boys and girls of NXT because I think there's a lot of good talent there, and I think that the system is very good.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree. I think it should be probably an opening match. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to pick the Mexicans losing here and joining the Italians, I think, in the terms of the match itself and the provision. So that's my prediction. But let's move on to the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. Toxic Attraction will take on challengers Katana Chance and Kaden Carter. listen, whatever they want, you know, Katana Chance and Keaton Carter have gotten really good in the ring for some time, you know. Toxic Attraction, again, another solid women's tag team. I think this should be another good match. Listen, I'm a mark for Toxic Attraction for obvious reasons. I think they'll retain the titles tonight.
Yeah, I see them keeping them. I mean, didn't they have them lose recently, and then I think they ended up releasing Dakota Kai. So that, I don't understand what the purpose of that was, but I'm sure there's something else beyond my understanding that went on. Toxic Attraction is one of the best acts there, you know, among the many, the many that are kind of brewing there slowly. You know, they're one of the best things going. And, you know, I got to give credit to Mandy Rose, who was somebody that I was pretty critical of back in the day. I thought she was another one of these, you know, these fitness gals that get into wrestling because they have a good body, because they're pretty, because maybe they could talk a little. And, you know, for a while, she was not particularly good in the ring. But I think her going back to NXT, her getting repackaged, and I think her committing herself more to the business and to understanding it and to getting better at it has really helped her. And I got to give Mandy Rose a lot of credit. She's put herself into a position where not only is she better than she was before, but she's also part of a really cool little act there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Listen, the tag team itself, really good workers. They're just getting better by week, just like everybody on that roster. Should be a solid women's tag team title match later tonight. We got the men's NXT tag team titles on the line, pretty deadly, against the Creed brothers from the Diamond Mine, or what's left of the Diamond Mine. I got to say, you know, pretty deadly really synchronizes the typical heat that gimmick brings on. And they're a bunch of tough guys, good workers over from the UK. They've been pretty solid. Again, pretty deadly. They've been pretty solid. And while the Creed brothers, I think, are a team that's also infinitely improved themselves as well in recent months, I think this is a toss-up. I wouldn't be surprised if either team wins tonight.
Yeah, they're two of the young up-and-coming tag teams in NXT and in the States. You know, and I like the Creed brothers. They're still a little green, but you know, you can see that they're committed to improving. You could tell that they have a good attitude as of now. And I like the gimmick. I like the shooter gimmick. I like the legitimacy. You know, it adds a different dimension, a different layer to it. And as far as Pretty Deadly go, I mean, they're like Siegfried and Roy meets the Beverly Brothers, meets the Nelson Twins. It's just, the whole package is really hilarious. But they're two big, tall guys. They look, you know, tough. They're English dudes, you know what I'm saying? Like, they look legitimate, and they're a really good tag team. And the shtick that they have, the stuff that they do, whether it's on social media, whether it's on YouTube, it's good stuff. It gets positive interactions. And again, I think they're a bit of a throwback tag team, but in a way that's kind of modernized, you know. I'm obviously not a big fan of people just marking out for old gimmicks and just, you know, revamping them and bringing them back. You know, I like to see a little creativity, and this obviously has some influence of, you know, Gorgeous George, of, you know, the Beverly Brothers, stuff like that, you know, and they've been able to package it together in a way where it's, you know, a classic gimmick, but it's modernized. So, yeah, but I expect Pretty Deadly to retain here.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to the North American Championship, Cameron Grimes defends against former champion Carmelo Hayes. Listen, these are two guys that continue to get much better. I've always liked Cameron Grimes. I've followed him since his Impact Wrestling days. And, you know, Carmelo Hayes checks off a lot of boxes, great talker, good worker, very good athlete. This is a series I think that can just keep going for months and months and months, and people will enjoy it. That's how good these two guys are. I kind of anticipate Cameron Grimes retaining tonight.
Yeah, I kind of see Cameron retaining too, unless they want to shake it up and stretch it out, turn it to a series, maybe have it go the whole summer, like you said. You know, Carmelo Hayes, he's a guy incredibly talented, got a great look, can talk, has confidence. Has the Shawn Michaels seal of approval, which is pretty big. And, you know, then you have Cameron Grimes, who's a dude that is just, like, clawed his way to get to that spot. Went through a period where he was wearing some weird black leather hat and was, like, the grandson of Skinner or something. Weathered that storm, eventually got the Bitcoin millionaire stuff, did the stuff with DiBiase, and he's really taken that gimmick. He's made it its own, his own. I think those vignettes, in retrospect, were really, really instrumental in getting that character over and getting it to the point where it's at now. And he's a guy that continues to improve. He's another legitimate guy, too. He, you know, he rolls jiu-jitsu out in Orange County, Daniel Gracie Orange County, with, you know, Nakamura, Matt Riddle, Killer Cross, Simon Gotch, you know. A lot of killers. Sumi Sakai, you know, female wrestler from Ring of Honor. And, you know, he's a guy who's just really grabbed his opportunities and has made the most of them. But, yeah, I could see Cameron retaining, but on the same token, I could also see Carmelo getting the win here if they want to stretch this out for the summer. So, either way, I expect a really great bout from these two.
Yeah, good wrestling altogether, so I think it'll be great. The women's championship match, Mandy Rose will face challenger Wendy Choo. Listen, I like Wendy Choo's gimmick. It's funny. She's wearing a onesie to the ring with a sleeping mask. She brings her pillow. But don't get it twisted, folks. Wendy Choo can work. And for a girl who hasn't been in the business that long, per se, she's become a good worker. She still has a lot to improve on. But let me tell you, she's someone that has been entertaining. And that gimmick works. And Mandy Rose, listen, let's be honest. I've loved Mandy Rose since she debuted. She's a sexy woman. I mean, she works out, obviously. And for all the haters out there, she's got infinitely better since going to the NXT brand. And I think that faction is probably the hottest thing going right now in NXT. And I don't anticipate that going away anytime soon. As much as I love Wendy Choo, I see Mandy retaining tonight.
Yeah. I mean, again, it kind of depends where they want to go with this, what they have lined up. You know, at some point in time, maybe they may have a new challenger for the NXT women's title. I mean, Wendy, I could see kind of getting a win, a quick fluke victory to kind of hold it maybe till next TV or something. But Mandy, you know, she's got a really good thing going on right now. She's a part of really one of the hottest acts there. I see her retaining. But, yeah, to your point, Wendy Choo, you know, on paper, it's very interesting the things that marks choose to hate and choose to like. Because Wendy Choo and Orange Cassidy aren't really that far off, if you think about it. And this goes for both sides, you know, the East Ends and all the other people. And some people might call us East Ends, but, you know, we're not. I'd like to think that we're pretty objective as far as this stuff goes. But, you know, Wendy Choo, that's a gimmick that registers with that audience. That's a gimmick that registers with casuals. It's something, you know, quirky, you know, a la Mr. Bean type of deal, you know what I mean? And I think that not only does she have that gimmick part that's really starting to kind of grow, but she's also really starting to grasp, like, the business and that style of working more and more. So, I think this has potential to be a sleeper, honestly, you know, especially given Mandy's commitment to getting really good and Wendy's ability to be able to work, you know, decent and be able to do the fundamentals well. This could be a sleeper. But, more than likely, Mandy ends up retaining.
I'm with you. And the main event for the NXT Championship, if the champion gets disqualified, he will lose the championship. Bron Breakker defends against Joe Gacy. I got to say, you want to talk about a guy a year ago who came on and it was kind of like a hokey, you know, gimmick at first, where it seemed like Vince was sort of trying to make fun of the whole, you know, woke type of persona that is sort of prevalent in today's political climate and, you know, coming out with a very sort of condescending, sanctimonious tone, the Joe Gacy, some of the code words, right, that kind of gets, you know, people triggered politically. I got to say, though, you know, that gimmick has worked. It's kind of incorporated some druids in a sense. You know, it's been very kind of Bray Wyatt-ish in terms of its darkness, its promos, you know, kidnapping Rick Steiner, you know, being very, very, not gothic, but dark. I think it's been a great evolution for Joe Gacy. I think he's been entertaining. I'm not sure how that gimmick would work out on the main roster, but it really, really seems to work in NXT. And Bron Breakker keeps getting better. I'd like to see Bron Breakker go over. I don't want to see these back and forth title reigns. You know, he just recently won the title back at, you know, at the In Your House, excuse me, the takeover at WrestleMania in Dallas. I'd like to kind of see Bron have a lengthy title reign here.
So with Joe Gacy, the PC gimmick I thought was brilliant. When it first, you know, when it first started out on TV, I was like, oh, this is cool. This could be something. This could boil some tits. This could get some attention, you know, like this, you know, this could get something here. And then it kind of maybe died down a little bit, or maybe it evolved, it changed in some way. I know he had the heater with him, the big guy, and I think they got rid of him. You know, he got released. But Joe Gacy, he's just been able to kind of make the most of his opportunities here. His talking is really convincing. He's got a little bit of Kevin Steen in him, you know. I could see the Wyatt comparison. I think if maybe he was fitter, people wouldn't make that comparison. But Bron, the way I look at it with Bron is they're going to go like one of two ways with him. And that's, you got a stadium show coming up, or, you know, you got a big show, right? Like at SummerSlam. SummerSlam's, where was it? At the Titan Stadium, you said, right?
Yes, the last Saturday of July.
Okay.
It's kind of weird. The first time it's ever been in July. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is weird. Okay, so you got a stadium to sell out. Right. And Roman is kind of on his way to transitioning out as being a full timer. Now you're kind of getting into the territory where Roman's going to start doing more acting, and you kind of need to start bringing up guys that you think have the potential, the it factor. Bron Breakker could be a guy that could drop the title here to Joe Gacy. If they really want to make that TV interesting and let them kind of run roughshod with that gimmick. Or, you know, they could just keep it on Breakker and make sure that, you know, he's the guy on that brand. And maybe continue to develop him further. But I just feel like he's at a moment in time right now where it's like, you got to kind of strike when the iron's hot. And I wouldn't be surprised if Gacy wins, but if Gacy wins, then that might mean that Breakker is going to get called up so that he could be on the roster and he can be on SummerSlam by the time that comes around. Because there's a lot of interesting little feuds that they could stick him in, you know?
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So
it should be, yeah, I mean, listen, he checks off a lot of boxes in the sense of he's really vastly improved. He's great on the mic. I think he's done a good job to sort of differentiate himself a little bit from his father and his uncle collectively. You know, it's kind of still hard to, you know, kick some of the mannerisms, you know, the dog, you know, during the intros and
yeah,
some of the mannerisms.
He's done it in a way where it's tasteful. Yes, it's tasteful. It's not marking out, though. That's the thing.
Yes.
It's tasteful.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, I expect a good In Your House. I know we're seeing WWE has announced that In Your House will be moving to some other venues. I'd like to see it leave that building in Orlando and kind of go out to, like, other arenas like it was for a little bit. Again, we don't know what the budget is. You know, again, Nick Khan, you know, don't get me started on Nick Khan. But I'd like to see NXT kind of branch out to some arenas for shows from now on and kind of just, like, leave Orlando. But, you know, again, whether it's In Your House or coming up in the fall, another NXT brand event, I'd like to see them branch out in the summer months. That apparently is going to be the case. They're going to other venues in Florida, maybe in the South. Let's see, though. But it should be a good show tonight for sure. Tomorrow night, though, on Peacock, again, with the 75 ads that we'll have to endure during a live broadcast, WWE brings you Hell in a Cell. And, Pat, I got to say, man, you know, this is the mark in me. Maybe it's just because I've been so used to watching Impact for 20 years now. You know, when they had their lockdown pay-per-view, every match is in a cage. I don't like something being called Hell in a Cell unless everything is not in a Hell in a Cell, just like TLC. Unless there isn't some gimmick match involved, I don't like the match being on the card without the gimmick. But that's just me, bro. Again, this is the mark in me. What can I say? Your thoughts on that?
Well, I actually, I just like to interject here briefly. The reason that Impact has to do that is because Impact is a smaller company, and they have to make everything a gimmick match for anybody to give a rat's ass about it. Whereas WWE uses those gimmick matches to enhance their main events because they have big stars that people actually give a rat's ass about.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I just, you know, well, let's go through the card here. Omos and MVP will be in a handicap match against Bobby Lashley. I mean, how many handicap matches have you seen already? I mean, really, I'd like to see it in a cage or in Hell in a Cell, but I don't get my wish, Pat. What are your thoughts about this handicap match?
First and foremost, I'm offended, okay? I'm offended that in the many years of existence of the handicap match, there's never been a handicap person in a handicap match. And I think that that's incredibly unfair to the handicap. Don't laugh. Don't laugh. I'm going to hashtag this at some point. I'm going to work on it and repackage it, but you'll see it out there. So, you know, I'd like to see a handicapped person in a handicap match, you know, but I don't think we've ever seen that. I'm incredibly offended by that. But moving on, I think that, I mean, I've kind of lost track. So since Mania, it was like almost got the win at Mania, and then it was
Lashley
got the win at Mania.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Omos got the win at WrestleMania Backlash, right?
Correct.
Yeah, did he? Yeah, he did. Okay. So
no,
he got the win.
A Backlash, I know. Yeah, yeah, Backlash.
WrestleMania Backlash, yeah. That's, so Omos got the win, I think, at WrestleMania Backlash, didn't he? Okay, so,
correct.
So this
yeah.
is the rubber match, isn't it? And now this is somewhat of a payoff here. I think Bobby's got to kind of go over in this one, man. You know, and it's got to be MVP's fault. And then they got to kind of move forward for a minute. But who knows what they have planned for Omos for the next couple of weeks. I would have fun. You know, I think that would just shoot.
Absolutely.
I think
absolutely
the sooner
the
end, the better.
I'm with you. I totally agree with you. Apparently just announced a no-holds-barred match. It'll be Madcap Moss versus Happy Corbin. I kind of liked Madcap coming out of the ambulance like the way Braun Strowman did, if you remember, a few years back when he was allegedly injured by Roman Reigns, and he came out of the ambulance in a new gimmick and new music. I never liked the suspenders. I never liked that gimmick per se. But Madcap Moss is a hell of an athlete, and I think that he still resonates with the crowd. Happy Corbin's, you know, an insufferable, whiny heel. This feud works. I don't want it going that much longer. But I think, you know, tomorrow's match should be entertaining. No holds barred gimmick, you know, should be interesting for sure. Your thoughts on that real quick.
I'm a big Madcap fan, as you know. This is a guy who has the look, who can talk, who speaks confidently, who's athletic, who's believable, and he makes the most of every opportunity that he gets. He doesn't seem to complain to dirt sheet writers. He doesn't seem to be a mark for himself. He understands what his position is on the card. He takes everything that he's doing and he accentuates it and makes the most of it. You know, if somebody told you that you had to wear fucking suspenders with no t-shirt and fucking boat shorts and boat shoes, and you have to go out there and, you know, cut promos telling bad jokes, I don't know what you think you might do. I don't know what anybody would think that they would do. But this guy said, give me that shit and I'm going to make it work. And as somebody who had seen that gimmick in action live, it worked. It registered with the audience. Again, not something that the marks like, but this is a dude who really, really makes the most of his chances. Got a little Scotty Riggs to him now with the look. But you know, to your point, you know, like where you were saying the length of the feud between these two, I feel like this has kind of like, this is the length of the feud has been helpful to this because they were able to turn Madcap serious. They were able to add another layer to Madcap now. They were able to make Madcap like a little bit more legitimate, a little bit tougher, you know? So it's been helpful for that. And I'm curious to see the match tomorrow. I expect Madcap to go over, because it's been reported by Billy Boddy that Corbin's going to be taking some time off because his wife's having a kid. So I would not be surprised if Madcap goes over. But, yeah, I'm digging the repackaging of Madcap. You know, the joke gimmick was good, like, while it worked. But, again, he's the guy who made the most of everything, didn't complain, didn't bitch, didn't moan, didn't bellyache. Made the most of his chances, and I think they're going to end up having a pretty good one, especially, you know, because it'll be a gimmick match. So Madcap, I think, is going over in this one, and I'd like to see him get a push eventually.
Yeah, again, it's been entertaining. Obviously, two good workers, a guy who's gotten much better, right, Madcap Moss, from his years down in NXT, and then obviously coming up, should be very entertaining tomorrow. The Judgment Day tackle Finn Balor, AJ Styles, and Liv Morgan. I don't know if it's been like a subplot of Bullet Club Light with the two sweet gestures between Balor, Styles, and Morgan, but that's been funny for us marks that love Bullet Club, obviously. You know, listen, Judgment Day has been gold for Vince McMahon, and, you know, for everyone that talks about Aleister Black or Malakai Black in AEW, along with Buddy Matthews and Brody Clay, I think his name is. I'm not sure if I wrote my
Lee,
name correct.
Lee, Brody, Brody Lee. Brody Lee, my bad.
The other Brody. But it's really funny about marks that have been critical of Judgment Day when, let's be fair, you know, that has been infinitely more entertaining, better packaged, better presented than, say, the House of Black over in AEW. And again, I don't like to engage in whataboutisms with stuff like this. But again, it's a clear distinction of, like, how good Vince can be when it comes to presentation. Look at what Edge is doing for Damian Priest and for Rhea Ripley. These, by osmosis alone, these two workers are going to get infinitely better under the tutelage of Edge. It's been entertaining. Edge has been a ruthless heel once again, which we know he's good at. As much as it's been entertaining to see Balor and Styles team up with Morgan, I kind of see Judgment Day going over tomorrow night.
I mean, again, it depends what they want to get out of this. I think this is something they could squeeze some juice out of. I think this could also be used to elevate Liv finally, maybe. I think there's a lot of potential with this stuff. But getting back to Edge, I mean, I know this is going to boil a lot of piss, but to me, Edge is the greatest Canadian wrestler of all time. I mean, everything that this guy has done, his ability to be able to evolve, his WrestleMania main events, you know, being the Canadian that was in the highest rated segment of all time in TV, you know? And he wasn't even wrestling. He was literally dry humping Lita in a fucking dingy mattress that probably got from the Best Western. But, you know, Edge to me is a guy that's just, like, immensely underrated if you think about it. But all of his accomplishments are, like, insane. I mean, you know, pretty much played a part in helping set the style for a lot of the mark wrestling that's out there now, especially the ladder matches, you know. Edge, Christian, and the Hardys. I mean, they're super instrumental in all that stuff. And just his ability to be able to adapt, his ability to be able to evolve, his ability to take risks, you know, to try different things. I mean, you know, he changed up his whole look. He got rid of the long hair. He changed the music. He changed the presentation. Everything got evil. You know, cut his hair, like fucking started wearing suits, started speaking differently. I mean, that's an awareness that a lot of people don't have. A lot of people don't have. A lot of great Canadian wrestlers didn't have that. And, you know, Jericho, I'll give him his credit. You know, there's a lot of things I don't like about Chris Jericho nowadays. But, you know, Chris Jericho is a guy, I give him his credit. You know, he had that awareness for a very long time. And I think ultimately he got complacent. And, hey, look, if somebody's paying me $6 million a year, I'd probably get complacent too. And if all I got to do is just go out there and come up with catchy, you know, catchphrases to make new t-shirts out of. Absolutely. But I just think that the work that Edge has done with Judgment Day has been really tremendous. I think even this little Liv, Finn, AJ thing is really cool because, you know, that whole scenario scratches the belly of a lot of marks. So marks are going to be interested in this matchup. And I also think that casuals are going to be interested in this matchup. And I think just, you know, the kids, the families, everybody's going to be into this, you know?
It definitely should be a good match.
It has potential to steal the show, you know? It has potential to be the match of the night, honestly. It really, really does. Especially with all those minds in there. But I expect Judgment Day to go in there.
Absolutely. For the United States Heavyweight Championship, Theory defends against Mustafa Ali. You know, for all the dirt sheets talking and marks online and in the Twitterverse, Instagramverse, you know, that Mustafa Ali wasn't being utilized. Well, he's getting TV time now against Theory, you know, the hand-pick, you know, protege of Vince McMahon. I'll be honest with you, dude. Listen, he's a great heel. He's young. He's a great worker. Doesn't really do much for me. You know, whenever he's on Raw, I'll switch the channel. I'm like, okay, great. I don't like his theme music. He's a good heel. That's it. But it doesn't overwhelm me or wow me. I just end up changing the channel. I'll put on Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity, and then I'll flip back to Raw. I get it. He serves a lot. He checks off a lot of boxes right now, but not somebody I like per se, but I can see the future in this guy.
Well, I find it interesting that you watch Adam Cole, but not Theory.
I knew that was coming.
I mean, it's just, I'm just being honest. Theory is a guy that now, because the dirt sheets reported that he's Vince's next John Cena, which, by the way, John Cena versus Theory at SummerSlam. Let's just get that out of the way now, right?
Okay.
John Cena, you know, like, you know, Theory is Vince's, you know, new John Cena. And even though he's got the street cred with the marks, he's got the Evolve background, you know, he had a lot of memorable matches there against their favorites. You know, now he's kind of lost his street cred because, you know, he's a part of the evil empire. He's a part of the machine now. This kid is going to be a big star. Barring any controversy or serious injury, he's going to go very, very far. And I think that this match has potential to be really good, too, because Mustafa Ali is a really good worker. He's, you know, I think, and again, I don't know if it's a work or not. I don't know. It could be a work, that whole thing. That could have been, you know, maybe he got injured and they're like, why don't we just come up with something to work the dirt sheets and make them think like we're oppressing you because they hate us anyway. I mean, would you really put it past Vince or anybody here to come up with something like that? No, of course not. And look, at the end of the day, it's the wrestling business. It's the fucking wrestling business. And you have to figure out different ways to work the fucking fans. Wink, wink, MJF and Tony Khan. You know? That whole thing and now him getting TV time, I think it's good. I think that's another thing, too, where they're kind of they're throwing out a little bait to the marks. Because, you know, once any worker starts complaining that they're oppressed, you know, all the fans want to come inside with them without really knowing all the details or all the facts about what's actually going on. But, you know, it's always WWE bad, worker good. You know, yeah, in some cases, that's absolutely the truth. Absolutely. But there's a whole other side we have to consider, too. But this match should be good. Theory should retain. I think they're going to keep that U.S. title on Theory until it's him and Cena at SummerSlam.
Definitely. It should be a good match for sure. A match that, again, does nothing for me. I get how some people think this gimmick is interesting. You know, Kevin Owens takes on Ezekiel. I'll be honest with you. It was funny at first. This does nothing for me. Again, I'll flip the channel. I'll either put on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or something else. I'll put on a playoff game of some kind. Doesn't really do much for me. I get it. It's a different gimmick we have never seen before. But I hope this ends tomorrow night between Kevin Owens and Ezekiel. It's really been, to me, it's been uneventful, Patrick.
I mean, again, I don't know the metrics behind it. I'm sure that there's been a lot of social media interaction. I'm sure there's been a lot of memes. I'm sure there's been a lot of stuff to back up them getting this TV time. you know, them getting this much, angle time and everything else. Like, you know, I'm pretty sure that there's stuff to justify it. Absolutely. But I've actually enjoyed it. I'm not even going to lie. And maybe partly because Marks hate it so much, so automatically whatever the Marks hate, I'm probably going to like a lot more. But this has actually been pretty funny. And let me tell you something. Kevin Owens, this guy, they can give him anything. They can give him anything. I'm convinced that they could have him dressed like a dinosaur and he'll get that shit over. He's improved so much. And he's gotten so much better, and I think he's become a lot more fearless as a worker. And I'm not talking about, like, the physical stuff. I'm talking about, like, the character work that he's been able to do. Because he can work. You know, the proof is in the pudding there. I honestly, I'm kind of looking forward to this one. And maybe we're probably going to find out that he's Elias after all. Who knows?
Who knows? Maybe. In the Raw Women's Championship match, which is now a triple threat, Bianca Belair will defend against Becky Lynch and Asuka. You know, listen, this entire triangle here, this back and forth program between Becky and Asuka and Bianca, I think has been entertaining. Certainly Bianca is a good worker, no question about it. She checks off a lot of boxes, right, in getting a demographic into wrestling, especially getting young girls interested and keeping that interest. You know, again, I don't care for the gimmick. That's not something I find whatever alluring, but she's been a great worker, gotten better on the microphone. Becky Lynch is Becky Lynch. She's incredible. Asuka coming back has been always, you know, entertaining. You know, she's kind of like that happy-go-lucky now Asuka. She's not that ruthless Asuka that we remember when she debuted in 2018 on the main roster at the Rumble. But this has the capability of being the match of the night, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as Bianca goes, I just think that whether you like the gimmick or not, Bianca's ability shines through. And her ability to be able to be a main eventer, her ability to be able to understand her role as a champion, defending that belt, I think it really speaks volumes. You know, you can see it in the work. As far as it goes with other things with Bianca, there's just some little things that I think need to change as far as, like, her, like, constantly smiling, like, you know, somebody could, like, you know, punch her in the nose and, like, pinch her puppy or something, and, you know, like, she's just gonna come down the ramp and smile instead of going down there, like, wanting to kick somebody's ass. And I think that's stuff
obnoxious.
That they need to kind of work on.
It's obnoxious. It's this happy-go-lucky, twirl my hair, yeah. I'm sorry, bro. I can't get behind it.
I look at Ronda Rousey, though. It's the same thing. So all I'm saying is, you know, maybe the reason why you don't like it isn't so much that the worker, like, why the worker that's doing it, as it is why the worker is doing it. You know what I'm saying? Because, again, we don't know what Bianca's being told back there. And, you know, say what you want about Bianca's wrestling gimmick or whatever you want to, you know, dissect and call whatever. Bianca has a pretty smile. She's a pretty girl, and people like to see people smile. And, you know, people like to see people with nice smile. So this is all stuff that, like, is a part of the package. And look, you know, I know a lot of wrestling fans might hear that and be like, oh, my God, this is weird. This is creepy. But it's true. You're selling an appearance. The appearance is part of it. You know what I'm saying? If Stone Cold Steve Austin looked like fucking Michael Bolton, I don't think it would have been as successful. You know? It's a matter of just, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin – rocking the trunks, you know, the black boots, the black trunks, the shaved head, looking the way he looked. That's a part of it. And the appearance is a part of it. Bianca, you know, she's just really talented, though, in the ring, man. And I think over time she's eventually going to evolve from this, and we're going to be able to see a different side of her. But her ability and her ability and really the fact that she's been able to grasp the business the way she has in the short amount of time she has is really, really impressive. Asuka, you know, Asuka's going to be Asuka, man. The package, everything. She looked like she definitely got a lot leaner since she's been gone, too. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they put the belt on her, especially because you got a long way to go between Becky and Ronda. and you kind of know that Becky and Ronda is going to be the end game. Plus, we got that draft coming up. So what's the sense of putting the title on Becky, you know, if you're just gonna have her drafted over to Raw so that you could set up her and Ronda? I don't know. It's kind of, well, Ronda's on SmackDown, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Becky would have to go from Raw to SmackDown. There you go. So they would have to set that up that way. I mean, you could put it on Asuka, but then, I mean, again, it kind of kills the whole Bianca thing, you know? And, excuse me, I feel like with Bianca and Becky, you kind of want to do the rubber match a year later at SummerSlam. You know what I'm saying? You kind of want to gear it towards that. So they could put it on Becky and have Becky hold it till SummerSlam and then have Bianca beat her there and get her revenge. Or Bianca could hold it till there and they have the rematch and Bianca goes over. And then, you know, the month after or two months after, Becky gets drafted to SmackDown and then you start setting up her and Ronda. But, yeah, I'm with you. Regardless of all of those potential outcomes that I've outlined, I think this match is going to be awesome. And, that's another one that could be match of the night.
Absolutely. And in the main event, for the third time, maybe not the rubber match, but maybe the conclusion of this feud, Cody Rhodes will take on Seth Rollins inside the structure, the only match inside Hell in a Cell. Conversely, and I'll tell you, this has been a very entertaining program since April, since Cody's debut at WrestleMania in Dallas. He's come on, he's been plugging great promos. He's just been, you know, he's been worth his weight in gold to Vince McMahon. Every dollar that he's paid for Cody has worked out in merch. It's worked in gate. I worked with having Cody's face on a truck, driving up and down the strip last weekend in Las Vegas, right in front of the T-Mobile Arena, in front of AEW fans, which is kind of interesting. I think this match is going to, again, be solid. Hopefully a violent Hell in a Cell match, which is what we like to see. I think Cody's going to go over again. I think, you know, Cody's riding this momentum, and I think Vince sees that. He's resonating with the crowd as a babyface, but not an insufferable babyface per se, but as a babyface that's sticking up for himself and taking it to the obnoxious heel. It's been a good program for sure. I hate to see it end tomorrow night, but it should be a hell of a match here to close out Hell in a Cell tomorrow.
This one kind of like makes me think, you know, like, and again, it all depends where they want to go. Cody, to me, if I was booking this, I would have Seth go over because you want to do Seth and Roman at SummerSlam, especially after the Royal Rumble match. And I think that would be a big match to draw a crowd, especially because those two can have really good matches together. And I feel like Cody would be better off winning Money in the Bank and holding that championship opportunity for like a year and maybe either cashing in at WrestleMania after Roman beats The Rock or I don't know, you know. Like a million and one different possibilities, but I feel like Cody having the briefcase is something very, very intriguing to me. So that's something I would like to see. But even if Cody goes over here, you can kind of set up Cody versus Roman at SummerSlam, and then maybe you can put the briefcase on Seth or something else. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go. The other thing, too, you know, we got to kind of consider where they're going with Matt Riddle because he could also play a part in the briefcase. I mean, this was kind of tough to call, you know. I feel like a lot of it has to do with where they want to go. And this is kind of one of those ones where I think the booking decision will really answer more questions than anything else.
Well, again, it should be a great premium live event tomorrow on Peacock, again, with the 77 commercials during the broadcast.
My God. You know what? Why don't you just pay the $5 extra every week on this show or every other week or whatever the hell it is that this thing's booked, okay? I got to come up. It's bad enough. It's bad enough. All right? Let me tell you something. I coach nonprofit curling classes, okay? I'm an expert curler. I coach this stuff on the weekend. I volunteer my time. Some parents pay me. It's not funny. All right? This is my life. Okay? I'm a curling coach, and I take my time off on the weekends to be on this show, all right? I'm not getting compensated. I want everybody to know. And I don't care. Fire me, you fucking Mark. But I'm just saying that I take time from my busy schedule as a curling coach to come on this show. I got to be here. And then on top of it all, I have to hear you bellyache every single time because you're too darn cheap to pay $5 extra to get it with commercial free.
Hey,
come
Vince
on, man.
Enough of,
get the program.
Vince, listen, Vince takes enough of my money, and I'm not seeing the ROI in the stock, okay? So you know what? I don't want to give Vince McMahon any more of my hard-earned dollars. Okay, I'll leave
well, you
it
know
at
what?
That there.
Then start up a Facebook. Start up a Facebook group. Start up a Facebook support group. Start up an Instagram group. All right? People against Peacock commercials. You know, PPC, the people against Peacock commercials, the Pepsi.
Hey,
you know,
hey, don't put it past me. I got a lot of time on my hands, all right? Don't put it past you, okay? Don't put it past me.
I would not. I would not. That's
yes,
the scary
absolutely.
Part.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. So it should be a good event tomorrow night. Some news cycle stuff here, bro. First of all, you know, let's start off with the most humorous of the news cycle this week, going back to Sunday and Double or Nothing, almost a five-hour pay-per-view for AEW. Tony Khan's what has now become a historic meme of a meltdown after the show during the media press conference. You know, Tony got triggered when a reporter – well, I'm not sure what caused that those people that were in the room with him referenced the Eric Bischoff comments about CM Punk. Listen, if there was ever a guy that was high on Adderall or just coked up, it seemed like it was Tony Khan because he got really defensive about the comments concerning CM Punk.
Oh, man. Well, listen, whether he was skiing the slopes that night, whether he was on the Tony, we don't know. I mean, I hope that if he is, he's at least listening to the Scarface soundtrack because there's a lot of gems down there. And I've heard from some people that it really works well with cocaine. But I'm gonna tread lightly on this. I'm not gonna be too mean. I'm not gonna say anything fucked up because you know I know that there's some AEW fans that listen to this show, and I don't want to hurt their feelings. Because I know that they're very, very sensitive when it comes to AEW. And let me tell you something, folks. There's nothing wrong with liking something and admitting that it has some issues. I think you and I, both, Professor, love this great country of ours, the United States of America. But there's things about it that we don't like. But it doesn't mean that we love it any less, right?
No, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So all I'm saying is that you can like AEW. Heck, you can love AEW. That's perfectly fine. But when people who might know a little bit more about wrestling than you do, or when people in general might kind of raise a concern or might have a criticism of it, maybe take a look at it. Maybe kind of be objective about it and analyze it before you decide to get upset about it and immediately get triggered and want to yell at people. You know, think about it for a sec, because there's a lot of validity to it, and I don't think that it's – I mean, look, Tony Khan is not a guy who paid his dues for staying in the business. He's not a guy who, you know, was mentored by anybody or learned any particular type of thing. He literally bought his way into the business. And – a lot of that is going to rub people who have been in the business for many years the wrong way. And a lot of people are not going to like it, but they're also going to understand that that's business, you know, and you just gotta deal with it because, hey, there's opportunities for people to make money. So yeah, AEW fans, stop being so thin-skinned. As far as Tony Khan goes, man, I just don't know what that was about, man. I just don't know what that was about. But to me, as somebody, you know, who's been around the business, who's been involved in the business, it's just very unprofessional, man. It's very, very unprofessional, and it looked very unprofessional. And I think that there's other ways for him to be able to address Eric Bischoff's comments or anybody's comments. You know, if you look at AEW, again, like this thin skin, it's not just the fans. It's Tony Khan. It's Kenny Omega. It's all these other people, Chris Jericho even, people that get triggered. that feel the need to have to, like, you know, speak up on every little thing and argue with every mark that has an opinion out there. I mean, you people are above that. You're in the business. You're behind the curtain. You shouldn't even dignify that with a response. But Tony Khan is very passionate about his project. Obviously, he's invested a lot of money. He's lost a lot of money. And CM Punk is somebody that he's obviously incredibly fond of. I mean, I'll say it again, greatest promo of his generation. Not always the best of workers, but a guy with a great understanding of great understanding of wrestling psychology and how to tell a story. Absolutely. But, you know, that whole thing was just really, really, it was a bad look, man. It doesn't look good. And, you know, there's a whole lot of other stuff that's going on in AEW that I think, you know, it's just a lot bigger. Do I have time to, like, talk about the pay-per-view a little bit here? Am I breaking the format here? What are we doing? Because there's a lot to digest here. There really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd rather go with the best and worst of Double or Nothing on Sunday. I think it's a lot easier for the synopsis because 13 matches was a lot to absorb. And I would argue past
it. It was a lot. The whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing. It was too much.
No. Listen, I'm with you. I'm with you. It was almost 5 hours, if not, I think, a little over 5 hours. And, yes, it was Memorial Day weekend. A lot of us didn't have to work on Monday, so being up that late for that pay-per-view wasn't a nuisance. But it kind of sets the standard that, you know, coming up in a few weeks at Forbidden Door in Chicago, that could be another five and change pay-per-view. And if you really want to incorporate New Japan Pro Wrestling and AEW, I mean, I hate to say it, you kind of have to make this a long pay-per-view. You want to make sure you don't shun anybody and give spotlight to where you have to give spotlights to. I think it's a pickle to be in.
Yeah, I mean, look, absolutely. I mean, the thing with this is that they've kind of compromised themselves in a sense. Because, look, it's going to be, I think the matches that matter with the people that matter are going to be really good. And maybe even a couple of the undercard matches are going to be good, but I can tell you right now that the undercard New Japan guys are much better than the undercard AEW guys. They're much more fundamentally sound. So I think that there could potentially be a risk for things getting a little messed up. Usually in wrestling, it doesn't matter what language you speak. You can speak completely different languages. If you have an understanding of fundamental wrestling, you're going to be able to work. So when people wonder why two guys who speak different languages are able to have these classic wrestling matches, it's because they don't have to speak the same language. They speak wrestling. It could be a big mess. The other thing is like, we have to be real with this, man. This does nothing to get any casuals for them. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing to get casuals for them. Because outside of their audience, is anybody really going to know who Kazuchika Okada is? And Kazuchika Okada is arguably the best wrestler in the world, I would say, him and Bryan Danielson. But, you know, I know that because, you know, I'm a wrestling fan. You know that because you're a wrestling fan. People who know this know because they actually care. Casuals are not going to care about this stuff. They are not going to care about this stuff. So now they've kind of booked themselves into a pickle. Because even after the show, and even if the show's fantastic, it's not going to matter because nobody is going to care because nobody knows who these people are. And this, to me, is a big problem of AEW that really doesn't go, like, spoken about enough, is that they present stuff on television that you will only know if you watch Being the Elite, that you will only know if you've been watching indie wrestling for the last 20 years. They will give you no background whatsoever. They won't give you a video package. They won't tell you anything. They just expect you to know. So when you don't know, and you're somebody who's a casual, who likes wrestling, who's changing the channel, who basically is the demo that they should be going for, you know, you stop and you see this, and you're like, what is this? What the fuck is going on? Like, I don't understand what's happening here. Like, what is he talking about? Forget this. I'm going to change it. You know? So you can't really do that. Like, I have no I just don't get why, like, they don't use, like, their Ring of Honor video library to be able to put together better vignettes. I just don't understand, like, why they don't do that. That's a thing that really, really, really boggles my mind, because they have access to it. They have access to it. They have the ability to be able to do it, you know? And that's the thing that gets me. But, you know, I mean, the length of the pay-per-view is too much. A lot of the matches were really sloppy and botchy, including the main event. It was kind of underwhelming, you know? The MJF Wardlow thing, it was really more about MJF, not really as much about Wardlow, even though Wardlow was, you know, he got a pop. There's just so much about it that just was very flat. And look, I know you're a big Adam Cole fan. I know you're a big Britt Baker fan. But, like, them winning that tournament, it doesn't matter. It does nothing for anybody. It does nothing for anybody, you know? And that's a big thing. It does nothing for anybody. Like, that to me, that tournament should have gone to a guy like Max Caster. Or it should have gone to a Ruby Soho. Or it should have even gone to Samoa Joe. It doesn't matter. But somebody else. They could have used that tournament win for Samoa Joe to potentially set up him and Punk if they wanted to. But, you know, we'll talk about what happened with Punk a little later. But, you know, there's just too many things there that don't make sense. There's too many things there that they do just to do it. And there's just not enough background for a casual viewer to get interested. And that's a major, major problem.
Well, it really is. No, it certainly is, and sort of along the lines of what was a result of Sunday with Double or Nothing this week, Pat, obviously, a lot of news. Shout out to our good friend James Barricado sending me this article today for the show. It's from DirtSheets.net. Again, ladies and gentlemen, take it at its face value. It's certainly not as credible as Billy Body, that's for sure. But I'll just read you some excerpts from the article real quick here. 3 days have now passed since MGF's shocking promo, which broke the internet with his foul-mouthed rant against his employer and boss, subsequently Tony Khan. But the backstage reports from AEW coming directly from Dave Meltzer, again, take it at face value, because we all know Dave is about as credible as CNN and MSNBC on a nightly basis, suggest that the MGF segment has not gone according to plan and may have even backfired on the promotion. According to Wrestling Observer Online, AEW's plan was to have MGF cut a heel promo and to have his mic cut off midway, with the idea that the segment was very much like CM Punk's pipe bomb from Las Vegas in 2011. The problem starts when AEW allowed MGF to speak for nearly 9 minutes before his mic was eventually cut, which was reportedly not the plan. Furthermore, MGF was widely cheered by fans in Los Angeles, especially during the end of the promo, particularly while talking about big pay money to ex-WWE guys and how they couldn't lace up his boots, quote, "who can't lace my boots." This resulted in many fans in Los Angeles at the Inglewood Forum chanting MJF, MJF, which is something that AEW backstage did not want. Pat, a lot to unpackage here and dissect. The promo itself, obviously a profanity-laced promo. A lot of fans went nuts on Wednesday night after the promo. I think it's gotten well over 1 million views already on YouTube. I think it's a work. We've talked about it off the air, but it seems like, and again, I don't want to give credence to Dave Meltzer, but I think as much as they're trying to portray MJF as the heel in this feud with Wardlow and other people, it just seems like people are just, this is going to resonate with fans. And I think it's going to make MJF more of a baby face, and maybe inadvertently that was not the goal here. That's just my guess. Your thoughts?
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack. Billy Body initially reported over the weekend that this was a part of a work, and that basically he and Khan came to an agreement to give him a raise, basically, for the remainder of his contract, but that the idea was for him to become a tweener, to pursue the title, and then when 24 comes around, they would negotiate. And they would negotiate pretty much over, like, creative. He would get creative control, and he would get right to refusal. Now, from what I understand, there's some of that even now with this, which I got to tell you, I don't care who you are, creative control is a bad thing. It is a bad thing in wrestling. Whether it's partial creative control, reasonable creative control, or full creative control, it doesn't end well in the business. But that's a whole other thing. You know, I think that, you know, this is a work. They're going to stick with this. They're going to go as far as they can with it. They don't have to answer to corporate. They can do whatever they want. They could cancel autograph signings. They could remove his merchandise. They could do everything that they want. Whether it was the intention for him to become a tweener or not, you don't know. I think it's a fucking work. I think the dirt sheets are in on this because look at the people that are reporting it. And they're reporting the complete opposite of what Body's reporting. So that let that tell you what it is. I'm also going to wait on what Body has to say in regards to this. But, I mean, again, this is stuff he reported over the weekend that they were going to launch this angle, that they were basically waiting for an opportunity to do it. And they figured that since, you know, the show is kind of long, you know, they figured that they just accelerate this now and they start doing it now. So I fully expect MJF to become like a tweener, basically even a baby face. I think he's going to make that work for him. I think he makes everything work for him ultimately. It was a good promo for what it was. You know, it was exactly what that crowd likes. It's, I think, something that maybe even could pique the interest of casuals. But for me personally, just knowing all the people associated with it, with the dirt sheets and what they're saying, I feel like the surprise was kind of spoiled. And I feel like it's a bit contrived now because I know it's a work now, you know, and it kind of takes away the element of it. And I mean, people, again, they could say what they want about Vince, but that whole Punk segment, I mean, Punk even said it himself, you know, the Summer of Punk, you know, they were signing his, he was signing his contract the day of Money in the Bank. Like, it literally whittled down to the last day, and they were able to cut a deal that day. So, I mean, that to me seems a lot more realistic than this. And, you know, again, I mean, hey, I'm not really sold on it, but it's good for that crowd and what they're trying to do. And I think it's something that could, if done well, attract the attention of a lot of casuals.
No question. And I think it is something to keep an eye on. Obviously, they've been going along with the work. All of his merch is off the website. There's been no social media posts since Wednesday. Interesting to see where this goes. Along the lines there, obviously, another thing that happened on yesterday on Rampage. Apparently, Tony Khan put out a statement today via the AEW press release. Of course, last night, CM Punk acknowledging he has an injury. He'll be relinquishing the AEW championship temporarily. Now, again, this is a statement right from the AEW's press release today. Following the developments, AEW President and General Manager Tony Khan has announced the AEW Interim World Championship Eliminator Series, which begins next Wednesday night at Dynamite. Now, the multi-stage Eliminator Series, I mean, Jesus Christ, this feels like a video game. Number one, an exciting – I can't believe you have to use the word exciting in the press release, but okay. An exciting battle royal featuring many of the top competitors in AEW will open the broadcast of Dynamite this Wednesday, live from the Cable Dahmer Arena in Independence, Missouri. I didn't even know they had an arena over there. With the winner advancing to compete in the main event. That same night, the winner of the Battle Royal will meet former AEW World Champion and number one ranked Jon Moxley. Which, by the way, folks, let's just a little caveat here. The ranking systems seem convoluted because if you look at the ranking systems on the AEW website, Wardlow is ranked number one. Adam Cole, the inaugural Owen Hart Foundation Memorial Cup tournament champion, is number two. Hangman Page is number three. Moxley is number four. And Jay Lethal is number five. So how Moxley is the number four ranked contender and now he's the number one contender, that just is mind-blowing to me and convoluted. But again, let me continue. He will face an eliminator match in the main event of Dynamite with the winner advancing to compete for the interim AEW championship at Forbidden Door on June 26th, live from the sold-out United Center, which I know it's not sold out yet, but anyway. Meanwhile, on June 12th, at the New Japan Pro Wrestling's Dominion event from the historic Osaka Joe Hall, the highly decorated New Japan stars and longtime rivals Hiroshi Tanahashi and Haruki Goto will face off in an eliminator match for the interim AEW World Championship, with the winner also advancing to Forbidden Door on June 26th live of the pay-per-view. The winner of AEW's June 8th eliminator match will face the winner of New Japan's June 12th Tanahashi and Goto eliminator match in the main event of Forbidden Door on June 26th to crown the interim AEW World Champion. Patrick, if this is not a cluster, you know what? and the most convoluted thing I've ever seen in pro wrestling in recent memory, then tell me what it is, because this is nonsense. This is absolute nonsense.
Yeah, it's really confusing. I would just do it where it's Moxley versus Danielson, where, you know, Moxley's the winner. I'd have Danielson win the Battle Royal. Danielson faces this guy, you know, Moxley, beats Moxley, and then I would have the winner of, like, Tanahashi and Okada take on the winner of Danielson and Moxley, have Danielson go over, have Okada go over. Now you got Danielson and Okada for the AEW title. Now it means something. But, you know, whatever. Let's see what they end up doing. They're talking about doing Hangman against Okada. And they're talking about Danielson against Zack Sabre Jr., which will be the match of the night. Like, I'm calling it now if that is the case. However,
let me add this too. And I'm sorry to cut you off. I'll let you finish. But what makes it so convoluted again is the idea that, okay, what you're telling us now is that the ranking system that you allegedly have doesn't mean anything anymore. It just doesn't. Like, please do away with it, Tony.
It does.
Because it doesn't mean anything anymore. How do you have the guy who's ranked fourth all of a sudden hop, you know, frog jump over everybody else? Again, notwithstanding whatever who's on ahead of him in the rankings, but then don't have a ranking system, because then someone's just going to sit. Now, again, that audience isn't going to care, because that audience is going to acquiesce and mark out for whatever Tony does with booking and presentation. But if we suspend disbelief for a minute, you know, if Wardlow, Adam Cole, the Owen Hart Inaugural Foundation Memorial Cup champion, and Hangman Page, the former AEW champion, are ahead of him in the rankings, how do you just leapfrog Moxley to number one? That doesn't make sense. But again, that's this audience. And they'll eat this up like Jello.
I mean, look, dude. At the end of the day, Moxley's a star. He's a bigger star than Adam Cole. He's a bigger star than Adam Page. You know, Bryan Danielson is somebody too that should have been champion a long time ago. Punk should have never been the champion to begin with. You know what I'm saying? They could have done a million and one different things, but they didn't. And I think they went totally wrong with this. I think Punk's return has been incredibly flat. It's been a flop. Honestly, and I look, I mean, whether the people like it or not, I mean, I was never a fan of the rankings. I think the rankings are ridiculous, and I think that they kind of paint you into a corner in terms of booking, because you have to book a certain matchup or two based on what the rankings are, instead of just booking what's going to draw a house, instead of booking stuff that's interesting, that's compelling, that people are going to give a shit about. So that kind of stuff, I think, like, annoys me, and that I also feel is incredibly detrimental to AEW. But, you know, it's just too confusing, man. It's too confusing. This is something that just, it doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. And again, I get it. They're trying to put Moxley in there. I think it's going to end up being Moxley and Tanahashi. That's what I think. And I think, you know, because they already had their match, I think, in New Japan as well for the U.S. title. So they're going to do that over. That'll probably be the main event for the AEW title. Okada might wrestle Danielson. I don't know, but I think I heard somewhere that he's wrestling Page. It's going to be Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. Like, it's a very, very, very flat card. And even if they bring Kenny back, even if they bring Cesaro, even if they bring anybody in, it's just still not incredibly compelling at all. And again, it's just... It's too much to understand. Like, marks are going to care about that stuff. They're going to want to listen. They're going to want to figure out, like, what all the rules are to qualify for this match. But casual wrestling fans, they want something simple. They want something digestible and something exciting. And all of that is none of that.
It's crazy, isn't it? Isn't it just crazy that, again, this audience is going to eat this up? And listen, you're right, Moxie is a bigger name. Listen, why Danielson's not in the top five is beyond me. I mean, that's another complaint I have about this ranking system. How is Danielson not in the top five? You know, how is Jay Lethal ahead of Bryan Danielson in this ranking? Like, someone needs to explain that to me. But again, maybe that's me nitpicking, Patrick.
Well, but again, that's fine. That's fine. If Jay Lethal was on TV every week and he was wrestling and getting wins over big people, then yeah, that'd be perfectly fine. But and let me tell you something. I like Jay Lethal. You know, I go back with Jay Lethal. You know, I've known Jay Lethal since he was a kid. We trained together. We wrestled together. You know, Jay is a guy that, you know, I've always got a soft spot for. And especially because I seen how much he loves the business from a very young age.
No, I'm with you.
But
I'm
if
with
Jay
you.
Lethal
I'm
was on
you, TV
every week beating people, then I could understand him being ahead of Danielson. That makes no sense to me. Why Danielson is doing what he's doing with that group, like, I mean, come on, man. That match with Jericho's group, that was awful. That was awful. This is a guy that should be doing so much more than this. He's a name. And again, just the way they're misusing him, the way they're misusing all the legends. You know, it's like nothing means anything, and it's all just kind of thrown together. And this tournament, or what they're doing for the title, is another prime example of that.
It's amazing to me. It's just – it's one of those things where – and again, not to sort of throw a wrench into it because it's still a few weeks away, but what does this do at the end of this month with – and I know that it's called Blood and Guts. It's a – you know, it's a reincarnation of the original War Games. It'll air on the last Dynamite of June on Wednesday. I believe that the 30th, if I'm not mistaken, just to look at the calendar real quick here. Yeah, June 29th, that will air. It'll be interesting because if, you know, if Moxie becomes the champion, now he's involved in this, you know, Blood and Guts match. It just, I don't know. It just seems like, I don't think I'd want the world champion in that environment. You know, two rings enclosed by a steel cage. I don't know. It's still weeks away. Maybe I'm just sort of putting the cart before the horse here.
It's just, I mean, again, it's a waste of, like, a guy who's over with the audience, who's been a main eventer, who's been a world champion. You know, you're kind of just relegating him to doing this other stuff that realistically he shouldn't be doing. There's a bunch of other guys in there that, like Santana and Ortiz, you know, why haven't those guys been tag champions yet? Why haven't those guys done more? Like, why haven't they done more with them? That whole Inner Circle group, where the fuck are they at? What are they doing? You know what I mean? And again, this is all just stuff that's just like, well, we'll just figure this out, and none of it catches. None of it really catches. None of it, and it's not even so much that it doesn't catch. It's that, you know, Inner Circle was over with that crowd, right? Inner Circle was over. You know, the whole thing, the whole package, the whole presentation, the song, everything, right? But what did they do afterwards with Santana and Ortiz? What did they do with them after the breakup? What did they do with any of them? You know what I mean? They've all kind of just been shuffled through obscurity. You know, Sammy's out there doing his best Mark Merrill impersonation. Santana and Ortiz, they're just kind of like floating around, you know, just not really doing much of anything. You know, Hager's fine where he's at. I mean, I think, you know, Hager's good where he's at. But, like, it's just... it does nothing for anybody. Nobody's getting elevated there. Nobody's going over. Nobody's becoming bigger. And you're wasting two guys that are main eventers in Moxley and Danielson to do, I don't know what, just to bleed? To bleed and to work gimmick matches?
Yeah.
Because one of your top eight guys needs to be in the show? I don't know.
I'm with you, man. A jam-packed week of news here, obviously. Last bit of news to close out the show here. It seems, as being reported by CBS Sports, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, will take place in his last match on July the 31st in Nashville, Tennessee. The legendary Ric Flair is set to make another ring walk. As it was announced Monday, he will wrestle his final match on July the 31st. Ric Flair, who many consider to be the greatest professional wrestler in history, is 73 years old. The event will take place associated with StarCast Wrestling at a convention in Nashville the day after WWE hosts SummerSlam in the same city. According to the StarCast website, the event is, quote, under the banner of Jim Crockett Promotions. It's being produced by Triller-affiliated Thuzio and will stream live on Fight TV. As mentioned on his Twitter today, he will be walking down the aisle for the final time on July the 31st. Pat, you know how much of a fan I am of the Nature Boy. I think this is dangerous. I think fans will mark out for it. I'm sure it'll get a turnout, but I don't think this is a good idea for the 16-time World Heavyweight Champion, Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Of course it's not. Of course it's not. I mean, you don't got to be a rocket scientist to see that. It just, I mean, I had the great privilege of hanging out with Ric Flair for 3 hours and drinking with Ric Flair and talking shop with Ric. And it was one of the greatest honors of my life. He is Ric Flair to the T. He is the gimmick. He walks the walk. He talks the talk. He is the nature boy. And to sit under his learning tree for a bit, to hear some of his takes on the business, it's excellent. But more importantly, I think the one thing that always kind of was always present was his love for the business, his love for performing. And, you know, he told me with all sincerity in his eyes, he was like, this shit's like drugs. This shit's better than alcohol. This is better than sex. You know, there is nothing like it for Ric Flair than walking, like, there's nothing greater for Ric Flair, excuse me, than walking down the aisle and performing to all of the fans. And I understand that, and I get that. But, you know, it comes a certain age where you got to kind of, like, chill out. You got to kind of hang it up. You're risking injury. You're risking serious injury. And I know I've said it before on this show. You know, I know all the fans love seeing all the old-timers coming back and doing, you know, these little spot runs. But one time, it's not going to end well. It's not. It's just not going to end well. And somebody is going to get hurt seriously or, you know, fatally, you know, like, and it just, I don't think it's good. But, you know, you go tell Ric Flair otherwise. That's what I'll tell people.
Yeah.
You
no,
go tell
listen,
Ric Flair otherwise.
You're absolutely right. And I hope, listen, I'm sure it'll get a turnout. It's a big weekend in Nashville for SummerSlam at that outdoor stadium. I'm sure hopefully ticket prices can go down a little bit because it seems like, and I have it on very good sources, it's not selling well right now. Again, it's still early June. We'll find out, but I'm sure it'll sell out eventually. But it's going to be costly to be outside in July in Tennessee, that's for sure, for SummerSlam. But that weekend, Ric Flair arguably will wrestle his last match. Hopefully it goes well. Folks, that's our show for this week. We packed in a lot this week in terms of previews, going around the news cycle. Pat, anything we missed that you want to let the fans know about before we sign off here this week on Blog Talk Radio?
Yeah. I just want to actually close with something. I don't really feel like I got to express it well enough before, but I really hope that this CM Punk situation with him dropping the title, with him keeping the title or whatever it is that they're doing, him basically taking time off because he's injured, I hope that this is a result of him taking a look at his work in AEW, taking a look at his work, especially in the last couple of weeks, and maybe being a little introspective, maybe having his come to Jesus moment with himself where he realizes that it has not been as good as it could have been. And I hope that this is a launching pad for him to do the work, come back better, come back stronger, work out more, look better, perform better, get that ring time in and come back and be the wrestler that we know him to be. I hope that his character work improves too, because, you know, I like the guy. I think he's a tremendous talker, but his work has been a little too preachy. His mic work hasn't been the CM Punk that we know and love. And I hope that, you know, he takes this chance to go back to the drawing board and come back better and come back looking like a true world champion instead of a world champion by title, an appointment from your Mark Boss. So, yeah. I would just like to close with that, and I hope that everybody has a fantastic weekend. Keep on keeping on. Life's a garden. Dig it.
All right. Well, listen, he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, Patrick Vincent Rivera. Folks, we'll come at you once again next week here on Blog Talk Radio. Stay tuned for broadcast times and when the show is available online. Certainly, we love doing this, and traffic is doing well. Our social media responses are very favorable. Again, you either love us or hate us, but you're still listening, which is what matters, especially in this golden era of digital media, as they say online. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, and I would argue father of the year, Patrick Vincent Rivera.
Thank you.
I am New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino for the third consecutive year, Vida Latino Spirit Online Magazine, which I know kind of boils a little piss, but it's true, folks. I am brown, believe it or not. That's we're the dream team here of commentary in New Jersey. Folks, we'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio with the latest edition of Working the Marks.
Hold on a second. That's how you're going to close it? That's how you're going to close it? Come on, man. You didn't even do the catchphrase. You didn't even do nothing. Come on. You got to do it like this. This is how you do it, all right?
I'll leave it to you.
And Patrick Rivera, the PR superstar. He is the Professor Fernando Uribe, and we are working the marks. That's how you do it.
Nobody says it better than PBR there, folks. We'll see you next week on Blog Talk Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Again, keep on watching wrestling, and let's keep on talking because that's what matters when it comes to pro wrestling and sports entertainment. We'll see you next week here, folks. We'll be right back.